I am Aaron Earlywine, and I have tremendous stubble.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Fastest 40 Minutes in Podcasting. This is Bill, as always. It is a very special edition because of who I got a chance to chat with earlier today. Got to spend 30 minutes or so in the office of Mr. Tremendous Stubble himself, Coach Aaron Earlywine of the Missouri softball team, and got a chance to chat with him about everything from Tremendous Stubble to Rhea Taylor to disrespect to plenty of other topics. So, you know, including breaking news about Kristen Nodelman. So, without further ado, here is my interview with Coach Earlywine. I went out of my way to not mention conference realignment. This is intended to be half an hour of realignment-free talk. So I hope you enjoy.
I thought we should, you know, both either say you're welcome or I'm sorry for the tremendous stubble movement that swept our little portion of Twitter. And I don't know if there's any message you wanted to pass along from for Greg, who started all of this.
Just tell Greg that I'm flattered that anybody would pay that close of attention. And it gained some traction. It was quite humorous, actually, so I'm not offended in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I don't know if you noticed that he had also started a pact on Rock M where everybody grew out their stubble and didn't shave until the season was over.
I did see that.
That actually got quite a few responses. So
That was very impressive. Tell all those people's wives and girlfriends that I'm extremely sorry that they had to be dating Abe Lincoln for a couple weeks.
It was pretty atrocious. I was not impressed with myself at all. All right, so I guess in the last couple of weeks there have been kind of two extremely conflicting emotions. A couple weeks ago, it was immensely satisfying in regard to, you know, making it to the back to the College World Series without the ace. And
sure,
we talked on Rock M about how, you know, a softball ace can mean is probably more even than, you know, a football quarterback or something like that.
Sure.
And then this last weekend, there was a lot of disappointment in regard to into losing twice, I guess. 6 months from now or 5 years from now, which one of those emotions, which when you look back on the season, what do you think you're going to...
Man, that's a great question. For me, I've always been a person that has harbored loss and defeat and failure much more than I have victory. So I'm sure the thing that will resonate with me more than anything is probably the fact that we should have won a game or two. And came out of there empty-handed and continued our, you know, our streak of winless College World Series appearances. So for me, my guess is that I'll probably still have a little bit of salt in my mouth from the losses.
I think you mentioned it was before the Oregon series. You had mentioned that, you know, it doesn't matter what you've done all year; it just matters if you're hot right now, and that the offense seemed to be slowing down over the last couple of weeks. You know, this is the same team that lit up, was it Kelsey Dunn earlier in the year, and the ace for Arizona. What do you think changed between in the last few weeks?
You know, sometimes it's nothing tangible. You know, we look at kids' mechanics, and sometimes the mechanics from when they were hot to when they weren't hot are nearly identical. There's nothing that we can pick out on video. You know, 80% of hitting is mental. And I don't know if the kids put more pressure on themselves and tightened up and as a result didn't have the run production. But I was doing a count yesterday with my coaches talking about this team. And, you know, we failed to remember that seven of the kids that were on the field this year did not play in the College World Series last year. They were on the team, but there's a difference between being on the bench at the College World Series and being under the lights. So we just wonder how much that stage and that spotlight made them tight and nervous. And it really showed when we got runners in scoring position. It seemed like instead of the pressure being on the pitcher, the pressure was on us. And we just weren't courageous enough to be aggressive and get a hit and knock those runs in. So my assumption is that it was a mental thing and it was really unfortunate. But the truth is, it is not about who's the best team. It's about who is the best team that particular day. And it's proven even more so by the fact that Washington lost two games in a row. You know, they're the best team in the country. But the fact of the matter was, they weren't better than those teams on that given day. So some of it's coincidence, some of it's fate, and I think some of it was nerves.
Did you watch any of the Arizona-UCLA
series? Yeah, I did. It was like a slow-pitch softball game. but, you know, everybody talks about the bats and the balls, and certainly those are factors. But there comes a point where you have to give credit to the fact that softball has really evolved in terms of its hitting. I remember when I first got into coaching softball, and there was a quote-unquote softball swing. And it was basically just contrived and made up out of thin air. It was a very unpowerful swing. And now the trend has moved to where baseball hitting and softball hitting are almost identical. And so it's a more powerful swing. And so these kids have gotten better mechanically. The coaching has gotten better. My take on it all is that if you want to reduce the run production, the easiest way to do that is allow the pitchers to leap, to, you know, they call all those illegal pitches.
Right.
Allow them to jump as high and as far as they want. And in men's ball, that's the case. Guys crow hop, they replant about 6 feet closer, and then they throw. That would do a number of things. Number one, you wouldn't have all the controversy over whether or not there are illegal pitches. Umpires wouldn't have to call it all the time. The second thing is that you wouldn't have to move fences back. You wouldn't have to get new softballs. You wouldn't have to decrease the exit speed off the barrel of the softball bats and create a whole new line of bats. And so then you could just play. And I think that would reduce the run scoring a little bit.
Yeah, it was really hard. You know, all during the Florida game on TV, they were showing, you know, this is, she's doing it right now.
Yeah.
And the difference between right and wrong was about that much. You really couldn't tell.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty hard interpretation there.
Absolutely.
Switching to what went well over the last couple weeks, obviously there's been a lot written and talked about Kristen Nodelman coming through. And we did I wrote a post, I guess, after the Oregon series, just looking at the major opponents on her schedule, not, you know, the midweek games or anything like that, but just seeing how she handled Alabama early on through May. And it really seemed like she wasn't really striking anybody out at a higher rate, but
right.
She was just giving up fewer hits and walks.
Yeah.
And we've heard a lot about confidence as a whole, but was there something that just changed in terms of her overall, the stuff of her pitches?
Yes. And you know what? We didn't find this out until 2 days ago when we had our meeting with Nodelman. She comes in, and the first thing she says is, I have a stress reaction in the back of my hand. And I said, when did this happen? And she said, I've been hurting ever since the regional tournament started. And I said, why didn't you tell us? And she said, well, I knew we didn't really have many options, and I just pitched through it, which surprised me, and I respected her for it. I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, prior to the regional tournament, I was throwing all my pitches with this grip. She said, Doug got with me before the regional tournament, and we put this pinky under the ball. And she said it allowed me to get under the rise more and to get on top of the drop more. And she said, because of shoving that finger underneath the ball and the continual throw after throw after throw, it put a stress fracture in the metacarpal bone of her ring finger. And she said, once she put that finger underneath, her ball moved more, her velocity was better, and her command was better. And I didn't know this. Here I'm thinking, man, this kid just gained confidence. You know, I was telling the media. And now I find out it's because she stuck her pinky underneath the softball.
So everything was like a forkball almost instead of
something. It, you know, anytime you put more fingers on a ball, you're going to throw it slower.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a changeup. You stick a changeup all the way into your hand and you grip it like that. But when you take fingers off, it increases the velocity and the spin and stress reactions, I guess. So our big dilemma now is, what do we do next year? You throw like this, or do you throw like this? Or is there a way we can compromise? So I think that's what happened. And you're the first one to know that from the media, so blast it.
Well, I was going to go in a different direction, but that's kind of interesting. So assuming that there's some happy medium there,
mm-hmm.
and you have a healthy Nodelman and a healthy Thomas next year.
Right.
Plus everybody else who's still on the pitching staff, obviously. How do you see yourself going through the given weekend? Is it kind of a pure number one and a number two thing? Is it based on matchups?
I think early on, it's less about trying to win and more about keeping both of them healthy.
Yeah.
if you lose a game, you lose a game. But I think you let Nottleman throw more games early on just to ensure that Chelsea's healthy at the end. And then when you get into conference and postseason play and games that you have to win, I think you give Chelsea the ball until she can't go anymore.
Yeah, I saw something on KMU about her, just how much she probably learned this year sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
And listening and hearing that kind of the more analytical part of the game. I mean, I guess that can't hurt.
Absolutely. The best way to learn anything is to teach it. And she was in situations where we were talking about setting up hitters, and she even had feedback and input. And sometimes we would explain to her why it was wrong. And I think she gained a lot of traction with sitting over there and hearing the coach's perspective. And I can only parallel that to my career, which was when I was young, I played with a lot of heart and a lot of emotion, but not a lot of brain. And then after I started coaching college baseball, and then I played fast pitch softball after that in my late 20s, it wasn't until then until I became my best player because I started thinking like a coach. And I think Chelsea's doing that.
We've heard a lot about, you know, the three seniors on the team, basically, and how little Mizzou might lose compared to next year. But, I mean, in what ways do you think the loss of these three seniors will have the most negative impact, I guess?
I think the thing that this senior group, to me, is most notable for is that they're good human beings. And I know that sounds corny, but Jana Haney, you're not going to get a better kid than Jana Haney. And McKaylee Vock, a kid that set the bench for 4 years and never complained, not one time. And Gina was kind of just a quiet kid that did the right thing all the time. And so, you know, the downside to that is that in order to pass on traditions in your program, especially traditions of character and doing the right thing and being more than a softball player, I think that's what those kids really lent to this program, and especially the underclassmen. And you hope that every senior class does that. But I think that's the thing that I'm most concerned about is just the influence and the character traits that those kids exhibited, an example for the younger players.
So something like eight seniors on next year's squad will be kind of a different experience.
It will be. And, you know, you can't have eight or nine leaders. And so it's going to be interesting to see who emerges as the vocal leaders and those who lead by example. And it's going to be really, really not only interesting, but really difficult, actually, because you're going to have a lot of people that think they've earned the right to be a leader, but only, you know, one or two people are truly the leaders of a team. So that'll be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Yeah, we get our kind of false impression because we know who's given the most interviews, you know, Lee Schweisberger, things
sure.
like that, but that is not nearly the same thing.
Not always. However, you know, obviously Rhea is a kid who everybody looks up to as a player, and she's done a better job in terms of her off-the-field leadership. But I don't think she's going to get full command and respect of all those kids until she sacrifices some of her uniqueness for a little bit more of a team approach. But she is the top candidate for the person to, you know, that's the person that everybody looks to. So we've had those conversations with Ray, and we'll see how she handles it.
You think she's not yet fully appreciated nationwide?
Yeah, I do, and I just think it's a Mizzou thing. I don't think we're appreciated, and I don't think we're respected, not just in softball, but I think in all sports. And, you know, if Rhea played for Washington, they would have talked about her and had her picture on TV all week, regardless of whether Washington lost two games in a row. It wouldn't have been a factor. I just think it's unfortunate that we get treated the way we do, and that's part of the reason why we're on such a mission to prove everybody wrong. It's like us against the world.
Yeah, it can't be bad to have that as a motivator.
Absolutely.
I guess, even though it's annoying.
No doubt about it.
We saw a lot about Rhea going from a power hitter to a more of a slap hitter and a speed hitter a lot. And, you know, you watch a given game and you see both swings. You see her trying to go real hard. You see her just trying to slap it and get to first base. Is there a strategic? How much of that is strategic, and how much of that is just her reacting to the moment? I guess
it's both. More times than not, though, it's strategical. It's situations where we need short game. And, you know, I have signs for that. Mm-hmm. Situations where we need a double or a home run or a long fly ball, then I have a sign for that. And then probably the other 50% of the time is just I just give her an open hand, which means do whatever you want to do, whatever you're feeling.
Yeah, we were joking during the Super Regionals when we were watching, you know, it's, okay, runner's on first, she's going to swing for the fences instead of, you know, but probably isn't that simple. So on the other end, there are all the freshmen. And I have a lot of questions, so just cut me off whenever. I don't know how much time I have. There were quite a few freshmen that saw the field at different times. Maybe some of them played key roles, some of them not as much, but I've kind of noticed in other sports that the biggest improvement seems to be between your freshman and your sophomore year a lot of times. And, I mean, do you think that's the case with softball? Do you expect some of these players to step up in a big way next year?
I do. And part of our philosophy, and I think it helps our recruiting, is that a lot of kids get chances to play here. You look at our stats, and all the way down to the bottom of our roster, kids have gotten significant at-bats and starts and opportunities. And then, you know, once we get into conference play, we try to go with our best nine. But, sure, between the sophomore and our freshman and sophomore year, it's an enormous time of growth for these kids. And I'm always amazed when they come back to campus the fall of their sophomore year and to see the way that they interact with the other players, the way that they handle practice, their excitement because now they know the system and there's no nervousness about practice, whereas freshmen are a nervous wreck. They're afraid they're going to screw up a drill.
Yeah.
They don't know where to be. And so they really morph into different human beings their sophomore year. So I'm excited about that class because not only were they good as freshmen, but it's going to be interesting to see how good they get as sophomores and beyond.
I don't know what the rules are as far as talking about incoming freshmen, if they're signed or anything like that.
We can talk about it if they've signed.
There were, what, three coming in or four, was
yeah,
it?
Four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you see any, I mean, not that you know really very much right now, but are there any names that you think could fill a void next year, or is it just going to be fitting into the...
I think there's two of the four that have a really good chance to make an impact. The first one is Taylor Duplechang, and Taylor is a track star down in Texas. She's much like Rhea, not only in her game, but in her attitude. She's a real tough kid, a real hard knocks type of kid, and she's a flyer. I mean, absolutely pick them up and put them down kid. So she could be a factor for us in the outfield and is a real, real good drag bunter, which would make her a nice candidate for that two-hole. Rhea gets on, steals second, drag bunter to third, maybe safe at first, maybe not, but you still have a runner on third with less than two outs. So I think she's a very viable candidate for playing time. And then the other kid is Madison Ruggeberg, and Madison is from Iowa. And she actually was kind of like JJ in that she played a lot of baseball with the boys growing
right.
up, was a shortstop, can play any position. We saw her a couple weeks ago at our Super Regional tournament, and she's in the best shape I've ever seen her, and she's just shredded. And a very passionate, enthusiastic type player, very vocal on the field, high energy. That's a kid that could play second base or third base for you. And even has some skills behind the plate, so and can hit and hit with power. So she should be very interesting to see how she might fit into our lineup. I'm excited about those two for sure.
You mentioned vocal. A friend of mine read the quote about that you gave about, in regard to not necessarily chanting for seven full innings in the dugout.
Yeah,
and how exhausting it could be. And he said, you know, that's one of the smartest things I've ever read. I hadn't even thought about that. That would be pretty exhausting after a while. You definitely see it, you know, you notice the difference when you're at home games, who has a chance and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
How does the off season go for softball in general? You know, everybody goes home and comes back. Is there a 12-month calendar here, or does it just kind of pick up?
That's a good question. You're asking some good questions. I get, you know, a lot of media stuff and they usually ask the same questions. These are some new ones. The thing that's interesting about baseball versus softball is that in college baseball, the guys are almost mandated to play in the summer. There's Jayhawk League,
right.
There's the Cape Cod League, there's all these leagues that they go play in. Well, in softball, there's nothing. There's a few 23 and under teams, you know, where you smoke cigarettes in the dugout and have a flask in your back pocket out in the aisle. I mean, it's almost like a slow pitch league. And it's really a non-factor in the development of these kids. So most of the time, they just go home, work out a little bit on their own, relax, lick their wounds, heal up, and then they come back in the fall refreshed. And, you know, I'm not convinced that that might not be the best thing even for baseball players, because everybody needs a break.
Well, right, and there's so many games.
Oh, no doubt.
In a given week.
Undoubtedly. And so sometimes I think, you know, it's probably the best thing that we don't have summer leagues, because you'd probably be dealing with a lot more burnout.
Or stress reactions.
Yeah. Yeah.
A friend of mine sent me a question too regarding Chelsea in the off season. It says, we've read a lot about how Chelsea Thomas finished last season and immediately went to work on a new pitch. Clearly she was reaping the benefit of that, but did her injury change the overall mindset in terms of that kind of thing?
I think so. I think the difference from last year to this year would be that we're not going to work her out as much in the summer. We're gonna let her throw just a little bit, just to confirm in her own mind that those pitches still exist. But really, our focus is on June of next year, trying to make sure that she's in peak physical condition for that day, for that game, with three pitches. And before then, we don't really need to do a lot of work. She's already solidified that she's arguably the best pitcher in the country, and she's already solidified that she has three viable pitches in any count. So now let's just make sure we have those with light throwing, and then just kind of usher her into the season more healthy, less pitches under her belt, and maybe just a fresher approach to the whole thing next spring.
Volleyball, Mizzou volleyball still draws really, really good crowds. You know, they made an Elite Eight run in 2005. Uh-huh. And it's been kind of a little bit of a regression, but they still draw pretty good crowds.
They do.
Do you, Texas adopts baseball, Nebraska has adopted volleyball. Do you hope to see the same thing? You know, people get a good experience in the regionals, they come back constantly the next year?
Yeah, we would love it. The girls are the ones who just eat that up. I mean, you know, it's nice for me to see that, because it means that people approve of our product, and so that makes me feel good. But really, the girls get such a rush out of it. The thing that they wish, and they say on a regular basis, is they wish more students would come to the games. I'm not sure how to foster that. But I know volleyball just does a terrific job of marketing and advertising their games and giving T-shirts and giveaways and making the in-stadium experience a better one. So we could probably learn a lot from maybe just sitting down with those coaches and say, how have you brought in this crowd? Because, you know, as you mentioned, their success hasn't been miraculous over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, but yet they still draw very good crowds. So, maybe that's something that we look into. And I think also, in addition to that, in order for us to have huge crowds and continue to have them, you know, obviously there's going to have to be some upgrades made at our stadium. I think a lot of the people that came to the regionals and super regionals sat in less than desirable locations and seats where you had to break your neck just to see home plate and stuff like that. So I think upgrading the stadium will help our attendance as well. But, you know, obviously the success is the number one thing. Our stadium isn't great. We don't advertise. We don't market. And the place has been packed quite a bit. And it's the number one reason for that is because we've been doing okay.
We were standing over by the batting cages for the second game.
Sore neck.
It was a unique viewpoint. if the stadium does expand, what do you envision? Expanding kind of behind the plate area, or making more permanent areas out in the outfield?
I think it would be first in the outfield, have chair back seats beyond the fence out there in the outfield, and then extend down the baselines a little bit farther to where it may be wrapped around and hug the field a little bit more, as opposed to, you know, right now the bleachers on the sides and the batting cages veer out this way.
Right.
We'd like to try to get it a little bit more enclosed and angled in to where those people don't have to strain their neck, but I have a lot of plans. As a matter of fact, I have a basket in that drawer right there. It's a basket. It's about this big. And every time I see an idea from a stadium that I like on the internet or on TV or whatever, I put that idea in that basket. And so today I actually have a meeting with my boss, and I'm sure we're going to discuss stadium renovations and upgrades. And I'm not sure if I'll bring the basket or what I'm going to do, but we definitely want to try to make it more of a fan-friendly venue.
Well, it certainly seems like you know, succeed and they will expand is how that seems to work around here.
I think so. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were, that Louisville baseball series a few years ago, we were, you know, leaning against the left field wall, basically.
Right.
It was overflowing, and then they expanded. So,
yeah.
I mean, hopefully that continues. Eventually, I'll learn that you need to get through these games earlier, so we're not always
in
these situations. As far as non-diamond sports go, what do you tend to pay the most attention to? I mean, obviously, I figured baseball and softball are number one and two, obviously, but after that, what do you find yourself paying attention to in the offseason?
Me and my family go to quite a few football and basketball games. I think the football games are more of my son and I, and the basketball games are more our whole family because, you know, the girls don't like to get out in the weather too much.
Right.
But those are the two sports I watch mostly.
That's pretty much, that was the list I plowed through.
Those are great questions.
I studied up.
Really good.
well, we do. I think we had a couple of different people trying to write previews for the weekend series this year, and we are planning on hopefully kind of upping, you know, with more interest, with more people we know are reading these stories now. Mm-hmm. We are hoping to do quite a bit for softball next year. So
awesome. Trust me, it'll pay off.
Well, and I'm hoping
to win.
But I'm hoping, you know, there aren't any more facial hair related trends, but you know, I guess I won't complain because it was a bonding experience.
Any press is good press, right?
That's right. That's all I had. So
awesome,
much appreciated.
Yeah, anytime. And tell all the people at Rock Hill, I appreciate their support.
My wife actually did not mind the stubble nail as much as I expected her to.
Really?
I hated it. So.